Welcome to Biblical Higher Ed Talk, where we tap into the wisdom of leaders and practitioners of biblical higher education for the advancement of colleges and universities teaching the way of Christ in the modern world. Each week, we'll tackle topics around leading your organization, expanding your impact in the world, and deepening your faith through Christ-centered conversations. Ready to make a difference in the lives of your faculty, staff, and students? Then let's begin our journey.
Today on Biblical Higher Ed Talk, I sit down with Dave Moja of Moja & Company to discuss the financial landscape in biblical and Christian higher education. While the challenges are great, so are the opportunities. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Philip Dearborn, president of ABHE, and we are honored to have as our guest this week, Dave Moja of Moja & Company, an accounting and auditing firm dedicated to serving biblical higher education. And if you've been around ABHE at all, whether it's at our annual meetings or in any of our leadership development events, Dave is a familiar face, and he's been a longtime partner with ABHE and really do support us. And we do appreciate, Dave, your engagement with us and as you're a friend of biblical higher education. And so I've invited Dave in to chat about the financial landscape of biblical and Christian higher education. Nothing more stimulating than to talk about the financial realities that all of our institutions are facing. So welcome, Dave, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you. It's always great to talk to you. And it's what a blessing to be here. This is fun. And I appreciate you giving me the chance to chat a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll get into the tough financial questions here in a second. But I always like to have our guests just as a way to break the ice with our audience. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us a defining moment that God used in your life that kind of set a trajectory forward for you to where you are today.
Thank you. Well, God is good. There's been a lot of them, but one I always like to think about, and some people have heard this if they've heard me at conferences and things, but I actually started in public accounting 40 years ago. 1984, I interned at a local firm while I was in college, and I thought, man, I'm not sure I want to, you know, do tax season every year and that kind of thing, although I've done it.
Just for the record, Dave, I was 12 years old then, so I just want to put that out there.
Well, I wasn't much older. I was, but I love it. Things kind of progress. Finished college, got married, went to work a few years later with a now big four, but big eight CPA firm in the world at the time. We were in Savannah, Georgia, and I had this church client, and I really liked the pastor, and I'd always kind of go by and see him, you know, meet with him every few months or so. And he'd always take me to lunch. So I'd always kind of set my meeting about 11 o'clock. So, you know, hey, we're going to lunch. And so they called and said, the church wants to meet with you, da, da, da. And I thought, this is great. I really need a dose of my pastor friend. And when I got there, I said, hey, is he in his office? And they said, no, he's out of town. And it kind of stopped me in my tracks. And she said, you have a meeting in the conference room. And I walked into the conference room, and there were these five church ladies who were very, very angry at me because I thought they had heard that I said that their annual Christmas bazaar was subject to income tax. Well, I never said anything like that, and I don't know where they got it. I mean, it could be if it's unrelated business income of a exempt organization, not for profit. But in their case, it wasn't regularly carried on. It was only a couple days a year. And they had all kind of exemptions from unrelated business income tax. Well, I didn't know. They're just hammering me. And I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to check on that. So I went back to the office. I walk into my partner's office. And he said, how'd the meeting with the pastor go? I said, it wasn't with the pastor. It was with these ladies who, and he said, you have to figure this out. Huh. So that was, I started down the road of unrelated business income tax. And that's just kind of followed me. I've had a blast with it, but that's been something that's always kind of been there in my world. Even though at the moment when the ladies were bearing down on me, it didn't seem like a God moment. It certainly was as I look back.
Yeah, yeah. And you think about the world that you're in and finances, having just recently done my own personal taxes, there's a lot of figuring out to do. And that's at the individual level, let alone organizations. And what a neat, compelling way to say, hey, you know what? God has put you into a position to figure it out and help institutions figure out complex situations. Really, that did set a trajectory to where you are today. So, all right, so let's jump in. It's no secret. Institutions of higher education, and this is not just biblical or Christian higher education, this is all of higher education, they're not flush with money. The Harvards and Yales, who have incredibly large endowments that are feeding operating budgets, that's the exception. The norm, even across the public sector, as everyone is struggling on the financial side. So it's not unique to biblical higher education. It's true of our entire industry. What are the top three financial trends that you are seeing that are impacting as you're working with biblical and Christian higher education? What are the three financial trends that you're seeing impacting our sector?
Great question. I think, especially compared to a couple years ago, investment returns are up. You know, we had a dismal time in 21, 22, and that kind of thing. And so being able to get 5% or so on savings or CDs or something like that can be very helpful compared to prior years. The market, of course, is up, but who knows, you know, election year and all that. So I would say, number one, there's an opportunity there, but you need to have expertise in your management group or your board to be able to, you know, watch, be like the sons of Issachar and see the signs of the times, if you will, and really be careful with your investment dollars. Number two is a kind of an interesting thing that's gone through, and that is many institutions got dollars from COVID from the government and created some bad habits maybe and some of those kinds of things. And I think there's a day of reckoning for many schools to say, to be able to say, okay, where are we at? We got all these dollars. We're not going to get that budgeted going forward. How did we do with that? What were the effects of that? And I think there's a lot of prayer around how we navigate the years after the COVID dollars came in.
Yeah.
And then I think the big thing, we're seeing some really neat things, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart, is with what we call revenue enhancement opportunities or alternative revenue strategies.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of work with our folks and others to look at identifying the institutional uniquenesses and individual uniquenesses of your team and praying about and walking through and comparing how you might monetize that.
Yeah.
And we've seen all kinds of examples from, you know, refurbing an old building to even a coffee shop or a thrift shop, just different things, new courses of study and those kinds of things that have just been amazing. And so I would suggest one of the biggest things in these times is to make sure everybody on your team, and we'd love to talk to anybody about this. We do a quick 30, 45 minute free, you know, let's set it up Zoom call to walk you through what we're have seen and are looking at. And then you can do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to the COVID and definitely see that as a trend where institutions were given a lifeline from the government. How did you see our institutions spend that money? Were there categories that kind of raised to the top in how they allocated those resources that perhaps is putting them into a difficult position today?
Yeah, I think there's several ways. The ones that I think are kind of struggling are folks who looked at it and said, I mean, not picking on anybody specifically, but look, we're going to challenge the big online schools. We're going to spend our COVID money on infrastructure and software and monthly payments for stuff. And we're going to get thousands of students online, and you get four, and now you've signed up for contracts down the line. So I think that's one of the big pieces. We've seen some folks that were able to really look at helping the students. You know, being able to, even more than the allocated, the required student money, they got the students set, that kind of thing, and positioned them to be able to stay in school, because COVID was such a challenge.
Yeah.
There were schools that spent the money in different ways, gave the students the minimum, and they lost a lot of students. Not everybody, but these are some of the trends. The positive ones, I think we saw folks who invested the money. especially when they could, the employee retention credit and that kind of thing, invested it kind of for the future. And the board was very conservative with that. And so, you know, I think we had a lot of conversations with folks about Joseph in Egypt, and you had 7 years of treasure, 7 years of profit, and then maybe 7 years of famine. And just thinking that through, that, you know, certainly we want to bridge the gap and spend the COVID money this certain ways. I would say that's been the issue. We actually had some schools that refused the money because their attitude was, look, either don't want to take the government funds, or our donors, if they hear we got $1 million from the government, might quit giving, and that's forever. I would say across the board, those schools have been blessed.
You mentioned online education, and I think you're exactly right that it's been fascinating to watch it. I've been at higher education in the industry for 3 decades now, so I've been able to see how online education came in and how it was, you know, cutting edge. And especially now post COVID, online education is pretty much the norm at institutions. And those who were on the sidelines and used COVID as the opportunity to jump into the market, it is a very crowded market. There are not, I would say the majority of institutions are offering online education. And while I certainly support it and think it's a valid delivery that colleges and universities ought to have, you have to adjust expectations and recognize that it's not necessarily going to be the windfall that it was 15, 20 years ago for a few small or a few select institutions that are now the major players in online education. I saw an amazing statistic that even with online education, students are still selecting institutions within 150 mile radius of where they live. So even though they have choices on a more national perspective landscape, they still choose to attend an institution within that 150 mile radius.
Well, and I think, that's amazing. I think one of the things that we have to do is ABHE schools, which I like to call our size schools.
Yeah.
We have to very clearly, and sometimes board members don't get this, we're different than the big state universities or the big endowed Ivy League type schools. You can get all the press from Chronicle of Higher Education and the Kubo, and those are great resources, but you're not necessarily them. And so you need to have a realistic view of what we're doing. And guess what?
Yeah.
We're glad we're not them.
That's right. That's right. And it's like an identity crisis for our institutions. I've been in that context, and you do see what the large institutions, and you want to play in that market and do the big national campaigns, and you want to do the billboards, and you want to do, but in our sector, we're going to draw, it's going to be word of mouth. It's going to be people that we know. It's going to be people that know the institution. It's going to be within the church contexts. Those are the streams and creeks that we need to be fishing in, not the oceans. And Bart Kaler, who's connected with us and talks all the time about this, the critical nature of it. And the trickle down is it affects the finances of the institution, where institutions have taken these funds, they've spent the money, they've locked in the contracts, but they've not gotten the return on their investments, and they're in deep, deep situation. So
that's certainly what we're seeing at some schools. But at the end of the day, we're making a huge difference. Our size schools are just rocking it in so many cool things, and coming out of COVID even more so.
Biblical Higher Ed Talk is sponsored by ABHE, the Association for Biblical Higher Education. At ABHE, bringing the love and light of Christ to the world is reflected in our drive to see our member institutions flourish, leading them to a time of success for their institution and giving them the tools and insights they need to look toward the future. Interested in learning more about membership with ABHE? Visit us at abhe.org or send us an email to membership@abhe.org. ABHE is your partner committed to advancing biblical higher education for kingdom impact. Now, back to the show.
You're working with a number of institutions, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the good things that you're seeing, but share with us 3 mistakes that you frequently see. You've been in the industry for a long time. So are there recurring mistakes that you see institutions make?
Yeah, I think one is, I'm sitting where I'm sitting, I would love this beautiful world where all presidents and administrators and boards have a very strong working knowledge of the budget and how that's going and are keeping track of it, and the reporting's good, and they got their finger on the pulse of the school. Sometimes that isn't the case. So anything we can do to improve that area, you know, our budgeting process and our reporting process that meets the needs of the people who are reading our reports, management and the board.
Yeah.
I would say that would be certainly one area that we want to look at. Another is duplicating effort. So we've got somebody over here in one program doing all the student accounts receivable, and we've got the accounting team over here doubling or tripling the effort to do it all. And they're never talking and it's never reconciling and those kinds of things. So just as an example, I would say that piece. And then third, I think just related to that second one is making sure that your accounting system is set up in such a way that you're tracking things once. You don't have to keep going back. Mm-hmm. A perfect example is non-cash gifts. If somebody gives you a car or a computer or a tractor or something, make sure that you've got it so that it isn't something, okay, we took it in and it went over here. Oh, wait a minute, I got to go track this down. And at the end of the day, we come into the audit and we say, hey, you got this. What value did you put on it? Well, I don't even know where it is. You know, some of those policies and procedures, and that can be taken care of in what we would call an internal audit function. Everybody freaks out. I think it's this big thing. But if our board, either finance or audit committee, understands things that you need to look at, accountable reimbursement plans, making sure that's all working, review and sign off, those kinds of things, that the tracking of non-cash gifts, having those projects going every other few years and that kind of thing, making sure that they're going to the accounting team or an outside group and saying, hey, can you come in, take a look at this and tell us where we might have deficiencies?
So to distill it, education and efficiencies, those are some of the mistakes that you see. And I agree with you. And I think one of the biggest best steps a president can take or leadership is make sure his or her team understands how to read financial statements. Mm-hmm. And I've been in those contexts where you don't want to be the one that asks a stupid question as it relates to finances, because we all want to appear like we know what we're looking at. Yeah. But I've discovered that a lot of people around the table actually don't know how to read a financial statement. So don't shame people in that process, but provide an education to say, okay, and it's a great role that a CFO can play with his or her colleagues at the president's cabinet of being able to say, hey, this is how to read a basic finance. This is how to read an audit. This is how to read your monthly budget statements that come in. This is how to understand the lag of posting things to the budget and how to track it within your department. To have those regular educational opportunities to be proactive with it, to not assume that those around the table know everything about how to manage things. So education is one of those pieces. And I think you nailed it with efficiencies. And for whatever reason, our industry loves our silos and we see them across the campus. And that's, you see the duplication.
Yeah. Well, I would say kudos to ABHE. I think we have been great in helping the CFOs try to understand what the rest of management and the board's looking at and helping the board. And, you know, the part of it is there's uniquenesses, back to that word, at each school. You know, the financial statements of one school may have some things that aren't apropos to another school. And so knowing the nuances of your own institution. And then I think along with the efficiency is get enough people.
Yeah.
Get volunteers. Get, you know, we all are budget conscious. We're all doing this, but you got to have the checks and balances. You got to have the segregation of duties and those kind of things. And people don't realize there's volunteers who would love to come in and help. There's part-time opportunities where you can keep the budget down.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if your CFO can't read the financial statements, then I think it probably is a time for a change.
Well, and or a lot of ABHE training.
Yeah, there you go. A whole lot. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and from our end with our clients, that's something we continually try to work on. Is looking at, that's our process pre-audit is, okay, did we get our adjusting entries made from last year? Remember we talked about this. Remember you put the work papers together on this item. Let's keep that going.
Yeah. So in the midst of all of the bad news, is there good news? What are the opportunities that you're seeing in the midst of our financial realities for our institutions?
I'm, you know, across the my clients and constituents, I'm seeing a real neat groundswell in recruitment. We're getting better at it. I think, you know, some of the ABHE training, I go back to Bart Kaler, some of the things that he's providing. I'm telling you, there's some great stuff there. But just thinking about it better, putting the right people in, you know, get the right people on the bus and get the right people in the right seats and all that kind of thing. There's a lot going on with that. So I'm seeing that and adjusting curriculum mm-hmm. based on what the recruitment people are finding and those kinds of things. I think there's some really cool stuff going on there. Again, this idea of continually staying on the alternative revenue opportunities, yeah. Yeah. You know, really having everybody on board. We may not institute it today. It might not be next year. It might not. But if we're thinking through, you know, yeah. can it be a fundraising event? A lot of folks are doing a lot of neat things that holistically work. Students are involved. Faculty's involved. There's fellowship involved in the process. And there's a whole lot of opportunity there. And that's something I think we've just really got to keep our eyes on.
Go a little bit deeper with that, because I've sat around the table and you know, you're making decisions for that are budget related decisions. And there are two main sources of revenue, student revenue and donor revenue, right? And so, and also your room and board, which is all student related, right? So whenever it would come to conversations of, well, what's a third stream of revenue that we can consider, it always felt like the conversation stopped because there was it was so small in the context of all of the other sources of revenue. And it was right. is it really worth the effort to do this that only gets a trickle in? And that would pretty much shut down the conversations. As you look at it, is there an ideal target that alternative revenue ought to bring in to an enterprise as a percentage, or help deconstruct that a little bit?
Well, it's a great question, Philip. I think and you kind of gave me one of my favorite platforms here. So we may need to extend this show. I'll be quick. I think the biggest thing that we see is prayer. We're not going to just sit down and figure it out. The biggest thing is everybody becomes overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Because when I say alternative sources of revenue at a board meeting with management and the board, everybody has a different concept and nobody has any idea how to get there. And so I think the key is to always develop a culture of looking at, of being innovative, of thinking it through. And that's when we used to these 3 or 4 days praying and showing up and brainstorming around the room and all this kind of thing, which can get expensive when you bring in consultants to do that. And I figured out, hey, people can do this themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When we pray for 15 days. We have a thing called the Hornet Prayer based on Exodus 23. And basically there, God says, look, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to lead you. I'm going to send my angel to walk with you. Do what he says. I'm going to lead you to the promised land. Hmm. I'm going to give you the promised land, but I'm not going to give it to you all at once because you can't handle it.
Yeah.
And number four is do not under any circumstances become entangled with the world. And as we pray through that and use that and work through our uniquenesses, all of a sudden, I mean, what we do is we get all these big yellow stickies all over the wall and just brainstorm ideas. Mm-hmm. And we may not do anything again for a week. You know, it may take a while, but having some champions in our team that are thinking it through and going, whoa. And as we pray, it's amazing how God sends people. Mm-hmm. Just, hey, somebody was riding on a plane and they had this conversation and wait a minute, we could do a, you know, community garden and turn that into a farmer's market. I don't know. Just, yeah. You know, whatever that, you know, kind of looks like. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, developing that culture of innovation is a huge piece. And we see, you know, if you can make $50,000, whoa, you know, if we've had schools that it went crazy. We've got one that the alternative revenue sources having to be rolled out into a separate C corp because it got too big.
Yeah.
So
that's powerful. And I agree 100% with you that to not get discouraged in the conversations of, well, what's a third source of revenue? And well, we could do this and we could do that. And okay. And then the meeting closes, but actually change the culture, because you never know iteratively the conversations that happen and the connections that are made and the God opportunities that come your way, that if you had your blinders on and weren't open to them, you never would have considered it. And start with the little things. And you're exactly right. $10,000 more of revenue over here, even though it's 2% of your less than 2% of you know, revenue or something like that, then why not? That's $10,000 you didn't have before, and then you can build off of it.
Yeah. And again, if it's a symbiotic fellowship thing going on, we talked to school last year, and they're in the process when they started looking at their uniquenesses and things, it just fell off the tree that there was great interest in and some experience in working in advocacy for human trafficking, against human trafficking.
Yeah.
And they're looking at setting up a 501c4 to do advocacy and lobbying.
Yeah.
And when they started talking about it, their donors were real interested in giving more to that.
Yep.
And so those kinds of things are out there that people aren't thinking about.
There's also grant writing opportunities. It's contacting, because oftentimes when we approach foundations, it's with our interests in mind versus actually those foundations have their own interests. And if there's ways that you can align with what their interests are with what you have capacity to do, there's another revenue stream that could be considered.
Amen. And that's part of this uniquenesses thing is to put together that inventory of what makes us different.
Yeah.
And that goes right into a grant proposal.
Yeah.
Last thing I'd say on that real quick is when we're looking at, we have two revenue streams, we're looking at a third one. Don't ignore enhancing your other two revenue streams. Are we not taking full advantage? Again, so many people are upgrading their recruitment, but also doing things for our donors or pointing out opportunities for our donors that we may not have taken advantage of in the past.
Yeah. Well, Dave, we're getting to the last 3 minutes of our episode. This has been a fantastic conversation. So close us out, and I'm going to put the CFOs on the hot seat here, right? So we have presidents, we have chief academic officers, C-suite, and others at our colleges who are listeners. What are the top three questions our listeners who aren't CFOs ought to be asking their CFOs?
Well, again, great, Philip. I think going back to earlier portion of our conversation, helped me understand the financial statements, especially the budget. I think across the board, people say, I got this much to spend. You know, I asked for this. They gave me 80%. Now I got to do this. And, you know, that whole thing, a more open, a more interactive budget process and developing that and praying for each other. Mm-hmm. I think the second question with it all is, what can I do to help? I mean, it sounds crazy, but don't let the silos happen. Say, hey, what can I do to help? I mean, the chief academic officer may have come from a school that does something really great and can save it here. So bring in the knowledge, bring in everything. And finance folks, be open to where that's going. And then third, I think is, how can I pray for you? Mm-hmm. Are you praying for your accounting team? Are you praying for your finance team? Especially if they've got something big like government reporting, Department of Education reporting. IPEDS is a crazy thing. We all have to deal with it. Let's be praying for each other that we're doing those kinds of things.
Yeah. It just reinforces the DNA of our institutions and really what drives us and our values. Values are how we treat each other. And to have distinct values, because I feel for CFOs because they're often the ones responsible to share less than favorable news without any sort of power or influence to be able to make any changes or differences, right? So they tend to be a bit of a target sometimes when it's actually the making of the entire organization that led to that particular point. And these are human beings and we need to relate to them and pray with them. And that's, you're exactly right. Building some of those relationships are absolutely key. And I think God will bless that.
Well, it's coming. God is blessing ABHE schools. The new ones coming in we're having so much fun. I've said before, I don't know anybody that loves their job like I do. You might be right up there with me, brother.
Yeah. It's a blast. It is.
It really is.
Yeah. And it comes
wonderful
through.
People.
Yep. Yep. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for joining us. Thank you for your partnership. Really appreciate you.
We appreciate y'all. Have a blessed day.
Great. So until next time, stay kingdom focused.
Thanks for listening to Biblical Higher Ed Talk. For more, follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. We're delighted that you chose to spend a part of your day with us and encourage you to reach out to us with feedback, topics, or guests for the show. You can get in touch with Philip, your host, via LinkedIn or at biblicalhighereddtalk@abhe.org. Biblical Higher Ed Talk is a production of the Association for Biblical Higher Education in association with Westport Studios. Views expressed on this show are those of the participants and may not reflect the views of ABHE or Westport Studios. Bring light and life to your biblical higher educational organization by inquiring about membership with ABHE at abhe.org. We'll catch you next time.